Just a heads up that this will be a headphones episode, as we might be getting into some not safe for life scenes left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
And trust me, that phrase has never been more accurate. Or maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just be doing some sexy roleplay with each other. Maybe I'll be Jar Jar Binks. Maybe Rob will be Sonic the Hedgehog.
Maybe, bud. But I do know that today we're definitely talking about Event Horizon.
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast.
That's right. We're doing one of my all-time favorite childhood films.
Yep.
Event Horizon.
Yeah.
This was the VHS that we had as a family.
Mm-hmm.
It was the proto sci-fi horror. There are a few films higher in my estimation. And as a result, I know you don't like it.
This makes a lot of sense
because,
about you.
Because
if I was to sum you up in a film, it'd be this. I'm not even, that's not an insult. That's not a slight.
Not yet.
That's nothing.
Not yet. It's not. But I know now my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, but what if it was awful? And so I'm ready. I'm prepped. You can be your honest, authentic self.
Okay.
Just don't be too mean.
No.
I'll cry. Before we get into all of that, before we get into what we're doing, let's ask the more important question.
Yeah.
How you doing, buddy?
I might skip that one this week. I might give that one a quick miss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got about an hour and 10 minutes before you need to run and I need to run.
Yes.
And it's all gone wrong.
I wouldn't say it's gone wrong. It's just life in. Life is life in. And it is what it is. It's all good. How are you, buddy?
It's my goddamn birthday.
It is.
And if you're one of the... Thank you. I got some incredible presents.
Awesome.
If you're one of the very few people who listen to this episode on a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
it is literally still my birthday.
Yeah.
If you're one of the many who listen on Monday, then you missed it. And
yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck
too
you.
Late now.
Too late.
Too late.
Right, let's sum up the show a little bit. We're going to be talking Paul W.S. Anderson and why he is canonically better than Paul Thomas Anderson in
Fuck
every
off.
Way.
Fuck off.
In every way.
Fucking Mortal Kombat and...
I've not seen that one. I don't care.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
I don't care.
Right.
I've seen the only
Resident
Paul...
Resident Evil
the
franchise.
Entire franchise. Mint.
Absolute shit.
We'll get into that.
Monster Hunter.
I didn't bother with that. Was that him?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't bother.
I wouldn't.
All right.
I wouldn't.
I mean, I don't bother with most of his films.
Yeah.
He's an awful film director.
No,
he's
an awful script
better than Paul Thomas
Anderson. He's a good director and he has potential because he can do it here. He does it in this one. He shows that he can do a film,
okay.
But just chooses not to
time and time again.
We'll
get to that.
We're going to be getting into the Cronut.
This film taking a shortcut through hell.
And most importantly, we're going to be getting into, what's it really mean?
What does it really mean?
What's this film
about? I know the answer.
I don't.
Right. Before you have an emotional breakdown.
Mm.
I've written a short plot breakdown of the film. Played it super straight, right?
Cool.
So I'll start.
Okay.
7 years after vanishing, a prototype faster-than-light ship reappears in orbit around Neptune. A rescue vessel is sent to investigate, carrying a small crew and the doctor who designed the lost ship. On arrival, they find it adrift and empty, with fragments of corrupted logs suggesting violence. The doctor explains its drive was meant to fold space by creating a black hole, but its sudden return raises questions about where it has been.
Exploration uncovers grisly evidence of the former crew's deaths and terrifying visions that prey on each team member's personal fears. The ship itself seems to influence their minds, twisting perceptions and eroding trust. Damage near the experimental drive hints at a catastrophic event, while the recovered video log shows chaos and torment beyond comprehension. I was trying to skip ahead. I was doing mint. Fucked myself. The doctor insists the ship succeeded in its mission, but the others fear it has brought back something malevolent from another dimension.
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
I have a question on this.
We'll come to that.
Okay.
Make a note and I've got all the answers to this.
Okay.
I've watched this film probably once a year. Since the age of 11.
That's impressive.
The hallucinations intensify, leading to sabotage and violence as the ship's hold grows stronger.
Yeah.
The doctor embraces its power, determined to protect it, while the captain fights to evacuate what remains of the crew and destroy the vessel. A final struggle ends with only a few escaping aboard the rescue craft, the captain left behind, and the event horizon consumed in fire. The bad guys win on points, 5 out of 7 souls taken to 2 saved. Mint.
Yeah.
It's a bad guys win movie, and I love those.
Yeah.
Right. Tell me, I can see the nonplussedness in your face.
It's not nonplussedness.
Tell me.
I think I came to this movie much later than you did.
Shame.
I think I got...
You missed the peak moment.
I did miss the peak. So yeah. I think I hit this movie in my early 20s. So I'd already been spoiled by 80s cinema.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean? I found my little nest.
Yep.
I was tucked away in it. I felt great.
Yep.
It was great. And then obviously I have my horror loves.
You do?
Which this film sort of references there and thereabouts.
Little splashes.
There's splashes of them.
There's splashes of The Shining. There's splashes of an awful lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Alien.
Hellraiser.
Yep. Yeah. Hellraiser I struggle with, but that's a different story. There's a lot to the film.
Okay.
And I feel like it's almost...
Is there?
Yes. I feel like it's almost a film in two halves, where the first half
right.
is trying to build tension and sort of have you invest mm-hmm. emotionally in certain situations.
Yep.
Which is great. Because right. I'm willing to suspend my disbelief and I'm willing to jump in and be sort of like, I'm
What's
in it
going
with you.
On, yeah.
The countdown's happening. We're approaching Neptune. Where is it in the fog? I can't see because of mm-hmm. Neptune's atmosphere. I'm in it. You know what I mean? And then the second half of the film is, it's a bit like Die Hard in space.
Yeah.
Which is fine because Die Hard is about a policeman who is like very human, very sort of like relatable in the way that we would struggle in situations.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The only thing that confuses me, and this is a big one, is that they are all supposed to be specialists in their areas, scientists.
Yes.
Like above, way above average.
They're astronauts, dude.
They
yeah.
are fucking astronauts.
Yeah.
In the second half of the movie, two people act like scientists and people that are like, I feel like mm-hmm. I am mentally equipped for this situation. Everyone else
yes.
flounders.
They do.
And it's fine. Because that's cool, but they're set up one way and then they're delivered another way. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a negative thing in the slightest because this is sort of like a fucking okay. cutting edge sci-fi.
I hear that. I hear that.
Conceptually incredible.
So your issue is they're set up to be smart. They act dumb.
There's a lot of moron behavior.
Moron behavior, right.
Yeah.
I get that. I see this film a little bit like Predator, the original 80s one, right?
Okay.
Where you have a team who are all set up to be badasses, right? You've got Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
You've got like, we are the biggest, baddest thing around here.
100%.
And then they go into an environment in yeah. which they are wildly outclassed and yes. they are quickly shown to be pants-wetting little boys.
100%.
Having their spines ripped out.
Yeah, definitely.
For me, this is the fallacy of smart people
yeah.
thinking they're capable, locked in a tin can in space.
100%.
With Satan.
Yeah, this which
and then
is fine.
Certain points, certain behaviors
yeah.
begin to become very, very stupid and very, very reptile brain. That doesn't break my immersion at all.
No, it didn't it break
serves,
my immersion.
It serves a narrative purpose.
It does,
but it also serves pacing purpose.
100%.
In that, and I can defend that. I can defend that.
This is in no way an attack. It is. Yeah, it's yeah, a no, great I film. I don't think it's the best haunted house in space movie.
No, it's not.
Because I think Haunted House in Space through the 70s and the 80s was far more futuristic in a way. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you.
It was
I hear
more
you.
Of a reach, so you have to sort of
yeah.
accept that in that timeline, computers evolved
but
the way they did.
It's funny you say that, and I'll come back to it.
Okay.
Because I put this film on as, like I said, one of my foundational
yeah, of course.
Movies. I watched it way too young,
mm-hmm.
but I watched it at the same time as I watched James Cameron's Aliens.
Nice.
And the aesthetic, that kind of Ron Cobb styling mixed yeah. with the Jean-Gérard Mobius 100%.
Ships. 100%, yeah, yeah.
It feels like the same universe.
Gorgeous.
So little 11-year-old, 12-year-old me, mm-hmm. I see Aliens and yeah. I see how that looks. And then I see how this film looks and yeah. I go, this is a film of the same caliber.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I have no means
yeah,
of telling the difference because I don't know what the fuck a film budget is, right?
Yeah, also you've not been spoiled at 11 with haunted house in space movies.
And the reason I think Aliens is a really good comparison for this film
mm-hmm.
is because you've got that shared visual aesthetic, but you've got a shared dialogue style. In
yes.
that all of the dialogue is exposition dump, sci-fi cliche.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at that first scene where they're going through what the mission is, who they all are.
Yeah.
It does that fantastic thing that James Cameron's dialogue does of being keenly efficient.
100%.
Because although every single line is an exposition dump about what the history of the world is.
Yeah, yeah.
The way the characters say it and the way the other characters react to that
yeah.
informs their personalities.
Definitely.
So it kind of doesn't matter that it's cliche because it's cliche that's being used for the right reason.
Definitely. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Right.
Aliens is really interesting that you bring that up. Aliens, I would say, is a slower movie.
It is.
But it's slower for the reason of character development.
It is.
Whereas I think this one kicks off and tries to do it way too quick.
Yep.
And the time needed to sort of invest in the characters.
Funny that as well, because I could also...
Yeah?
I can also tell you exactly why that is.
Hit me with it.
Later.
Sick.
The writing of this...
Yeah?
Although I've spoken about how good it is...
Mm-hmm.
Is by a dog shit writer. Sorry, Phil. Phil Eisner.
Okay. Right?
I was like, again, I've known this film forever.
Yeah.
It's only really covering it for the podcast.
I was like,
oh my God, who? I don't even know who wrote this.
Okay.
So
I love those moments.
I go to check, right? Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is this is something that's so part of my DNA, I've never thought to question it. Right?
Exactly. But then when you do, it's like a nice little adventure and you're familiar with the surroundings.
So I was like, okay, Paul W.S. Anderson,
mm-hmm.
I know his other films. He's done the Resident Evil franchise, which I hate watch and thoroughly enjoy hate watching. They're fun to hate.
It's a good guilty pleasure franchise.
It's exactly that.
Because it's like six or
it's
seven
the
movies.
The lowest of the low.
That's what it is.
Zero thought. In fact, if you do any thinking at all, it makes the films objectively worse.
That's the issue.
It is. Yeah.
That is the issue.
As a director, he makes films that are supposed to pass in front of your eyes.
Yes.
Whilst nothing else happens.
It's
the sort of cinematic equivalent of the Sun newspaper.
That's exactly what it is. That is what it is. Right. He takes Resident Evil
and just goes,
one of the most beloved game franchise ever, and it's just but my wife's fit.
Yeah.
And also Nemesis, he could be a good guy.
Right.
What if
everything that I'm basing it on, in fact, did it wrong?
What if
all the fans of these franchises that are coming into the cinema are, in fact, incorrect to like it?
Did you like Resident Evil 3? Tough.
Exactly that, right? So I know it's not him. I know he's not the reason. So I'm like, it's going to be the writer.
This is exactly where my head's at. I've looked into this exactly zero.
Good.
I've never been less prepped for an episode.
So check this out. You'll be amazed at the stuff that Phil Eisner has written.
Yeah.
Have you heard his name before?
Eisner I've heard, but I don't know if it's Phil.
That's because there was a chap that owned Disney for a while.
Maybe.
He's not that guy.
Okay.
He's the guy who wrote Firestarter Rekindled. The sequel to Firestarter.
Ooh.
The film that wasn't even good in installment one.
Okay.
He also wrote Mutant Chronicles.
I've seen this flash up in places.
Maybe. I haven't.
I've never seen the movie, but I've seen the name. It's always been appealing.
He also wrote Sweet Girl with Jason Momoa, which came out recently because I remember seeing a trailer for it, and it disappeared quicker than the Epstein list. It was just one of those things. It was like, oh, Sweet Girl's coming out.
Yeah.
And then it came out and all conversation got immediately stopped.
Okay. This is filling me with joy so far because I feel like I'm ready to go Phil Eisner trip. You know what I mean?
They're all awful,
right?
But the dialogue in this is not. The dialogue in this is a little bit reminiscent of, they've got that kind of professional banter and that kind of disrespect amongst people who are nonetheless friends.
It does,
It's kind of reminiscent of maybe Seven. You know, the sort of relationship between Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
Do you know what's really funny about that?
Right.
In Seven, I listen to Morgan Freeman and I go, that's a good manager.
Right.
Straight to the point. There's no bullshit. Right. There's no fluff. I don't give a fuck about your emotions. Mm-hmm. Just get this shit done. Lawrence Fishburne in Event Horizon is literally like, everyone's having a laugh and a giggle. Do you want some coffee? Do you want this? Or we've been in hypersleep for 65 days. And then he's like, yeah, so anyway, do you want to fucking get do you
working.
Want to get on it?
Do you want to do some stuff?
Can I get dressed first?
Yeah.
No. Get on. You're supposed to be fucking
driving.
And the
little ribbing that they have for one another that's obviously based on.
Yeah.
It's funny that, isn't it? Because Andrew Kevin Walker, writer of Seven and 8mm and Sleepy Hollow, was the script doctor for this film.
Wow.
In an uncredited role before he found his
group. So this is explaining a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it might just be placebo effect now I've seen it.
Right.
But now I've seen that Andrew Kevin Walker doctored the script on this, it kind of makes a lot more sense why the dialogue is the way
it
is.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. There is zero bullshit. There is one clear-cut person that's there to drive everything forward, which he does spectacularly.
I'm so wet for... You could... Lawrence Fishburne in this film, you could drown a toddler in my knickers. He is...
Same.
Especially in this film. I think he's better in this than he is in The Matrix.
Yeah, obviously. 1,000%. Because in The Matrix, I feel like he's there for the ride. In Event Horizon, I feel like he's driving.
Yeah.
And he's doing it with such force that you have no choice but to go along with him.
1,000%.
I... fucking adore him in every movie that he's in because he's an insane actor. The fact that he delivers such a powerful performance in this film is mental because, like you said, all of the dialogue is exposition dump. Yeah. All of it is sort of like, okay, we're already on to B. Yeah. We're already on to C. Let's get the plot going. Let's keep it moving forward. Come on. Sam Neill's very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Although Sam Neill is a weird one for me because he's in a lot of 70s horror. He's in a lot of like giallo movies.
Yeah.
He's in like some of the most incredible horror that's ever been written. Ever.
And Jurassic Park.
And Jurassic Park. Dude, he's, you know, Dr. Alan Grant.
Hunt for the Wilder People.
He appears in Event Horizon in such a conflicting role for me where I'm like, okay, so misses his wife.
Yeah.
Very sad, very touching.
His wife has killed herself because he's so busy at work making the Event Horizon and he's racked with guilt.
100%. He's changing humanity forever.
And the opportunity to recover his life's work is kind of tied up with all these things. And he then starts getting haunted by visions of his dead wife.
With missing eyes,
which
was gorgeous.
Love it.
This whole thing with him doing that, I was like, fucking hell, this guy's just desperate to kind of recover everything that's gone wrong in his life. Like, everything is gone.
Yeah.
His life work disappeared without a trace.
Yeah.
His wife killed herself while he was working on his wife's work that disappeared without a trace. I was like, the fact that he can carry this and still do like little wisecracks with the crew is gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's fucking incredible.
He's a survivor.
He is. That's exactly what it is. He is a survivor. I don't know the lyrics. I don't think he is a forgiver though.
I don't. That's as much of the words as I know.
Yeah,
that's what I sing when that song comes on.
Okay. Well, it sounds.
But you're
good.
Right. There's that little spark of hope, right?
Yeah, it's great, and I'm sort of rooting for him for the first half.
Yeah,
of the film.
And then it gets stubbed out.
Yeah.
By Satan.
I don't think it gets snubbed out by Satan. I think it gets snubbed out by him, and then it makes me question my own judgment, which is a great aspect of the film because Sam Neill fucks with me in a way that he doesn't.
Yeah.
Fuck with me in other movies because he's either. Very clearly the creepy, greasy weirdo that's like, oh, you're not good.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not good.
Right.
Or he's like the innocent dude.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Alan Grant.
But what I love about the film is that it sets up all the reasons why this would be too important to him.
Yeah, 100%.
And it sets up all the reasons why finding out that his life's work did achieve everything he hoped it to achieve.
100%.
Did achieve faster than light travel, but that the only way to achieve faster than light travel is to take a shortcut through hell, and that the crew have all died horrifically violent deaths, and the entire concept is a non-starter.
Yeah.
Is a really good place for an evil force to start picking away at someone.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Your wife died.
Yeah.
Your life's a fucking joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And now these cunts are trying to blow up what's left of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All makes perfect tracking sense.
And that's something that I can fully invest in because I feel like the work has been put in to establish that.
Right.
The same with Lawrence Fishburne's character. Mm-hmm. He is a straight cut. I'm pissed off that I'm here because we were all on leave.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that my crew and myself get out of this shithole. With our lives.
And this is all excellent, but as we say many times, I can sense a but coming, and everything that comes before the but. Oh,
no but.
That's just a straight...
This is why I love the first half of the film.
Okay.
Because those two are like the big main focus. They're the drivers of the story. They carry everything on their shoulders. The rest of the crew sort of disappear into the background, and then when the first aspect of tension comes up, like I said earlier, they're tracking their event horizon. They're going into Neptune's atmosphere. It's a big countdown. It's this, that, and the other. But it's very abrupt. I'm invested in how Lawrence Fishburne is handling the situation and where Sam Weir is.
Mm-hmm.
Is his name Sam? Dr. Weir.
Dr. Weir.
Dr. Weir. And that's it. Sean Pertwee. Couldn't give less of a shit about.
Yeah, that's because you watch Dog Soldiers and I've got an issue with him.
I've got an issue with him.
Retroactively.
I love Sean Pertwee. I can't, because of this film.
This is the first thing I saw him in and I thought he was mint.
If this was the other way around, then sure.
Yeah, yeah,
but I've seen
him
in so many movies where I'm just sort of like, fucking why? Fucking why? So now whenever I see him, I'm just sort of like, oh, fine. I guess I'm here.
I don't think you're wrong about the two halves thing for a fact.
Okay.
I think this is fusion food. I think you take something classy, like a croissant.
It is classy.
Right?
It's classical.
And you cross it with something populist, like donuts. And you add a little bit of cinnamon spice on top and you have a cronut, right?
You do.
Right. I know we've just mentioned James Cameron's Aliens. Mm-hmm. The Sigourney Weaver starring, Best sci-fi action movie of all time. Super popular.
Incredible. Back super in cinemas popular. On the 30th of September.
Oh,
director's cut.
Someone's always at work.
I've already got his tickets.
Yeah. Super popular film. Yeah. Super donuts, right?
Incredible.
But there's an art sci-fi classic from the Russian 70s, okay. directed by a fella called Andrei Tarkovsky.
Yeah.
Called Solaris.
There is.
About a bereaved scientist.
Fucking love it.
Going to a troubled space station.
Yeah.
Where the crew are dead and haunted by ghosts of their past loved ones.
Yeah.
Let me put this to you.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Fishburne is playing Black Ripley.
Yeah.
Takes no shit, does what's necessary.
Exactly.
The event horizon is LV-426.
Yeah.
Sam Neill plays the protagonist of Solaris, a bereaved scientist going to a space station.
100%.
Countering unknown life that uses his grief against him. So they've taken a popular sci-fi style.
Yeah.
They've added some pre-existing arty and sprinkled on a little bit of Cenobite spice from Hellraiser and created a cinematic cronut.
Yeah.
It's a flying crucifix-shaped cathedral ship.
Yeah.
Flying through space by taking a shortcut through hell and bringing back something monstrous. And if you're a fan of Dead Space,
yeah.
say thank you to this film.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Doom 3, say thank you to this film. That's the world we're in, right?
I can see it.
It's and as much as it's flawed and as much as it was a massive flop at the time.
Oh, huge.
Cost flop. 60 million, made 43.
Yeah.
It's influential.
It is. Do you want to know my favorite aspect about this film and the one thing that keeps me coming back to it?
Right.
More than anything.
Right.
The fact that I can watch a film like this and go, Rob would fucking adore this. Puts a little sort of like rose blush on
it's
it.
Got
you know
so
what I mean?
Much I love it. It's got Latin in it.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, got, I it's did also Latin got at the GCSE. Fucking, yeah. It's also got that one stoic, moody bastard that's immediately like, well, we can't translate this text. What does it mean? He's like, it's Latin.
Yeah.
It's this. And that's you. That's,
favorite
that's
character. Your,
yeah, exactly.
Favorite
character. I knew this from the get-go. We've not spoken about this because we haven't had time.
Sober Medic, hell yes.
Knew that was going to be your guy. I knew it.
Played by Jason Isaacs.
Yeah.
Come on.
He's fine.
He's mint.
He's fine. I couldn't tell you a single thing about his character other than he's stoic and knows Latin.
Yeah.
That is all I can tell you.
There's reasons for that as well.
Cool. Hit me with it.
Later.
Okay.
I've structured this.
Okay, sorry.
I'm talking about influential.
Yeah.
Thor, Love and Thunder.
Okay.
Interstellar.
I did not expect it to go this way. This has caught me wildly off guard. Okay.
Thor, Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
Interstellar.
Yeah.
Deja Vu. Stranger Things.
Right.
Netflix's Dark and Battlestar Galactica. What do they all have in common with this movie?
Hit me with it.
Ha ha! The way Sam Neill's character explains wormhole travel by folding a piece of paper and pushing a pen through it was used by all of those intellectual properties.
Oh, okay. But then to that list, you need to add Death Cab for Cutie because in one of their songs, they say, if we could travel by folding a map. There you go.
Right.
There you go.
What year did that song come out?
2007, 2008.
Oh! Event Horizon.
Oh, 2005. There you go.
Event Horizon's a very influential movie then.
There you go.
Once you've been using a Death Cab for Cutie lyric, you've basically hit the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, Interstellar, Thor, all of those Netflix things.
Okay.
That scene, it's literally, in some of them, it's literally almost line for line. Them going, well, we make a hole in space and someone going, speak English, you fucking nerd. And then he gets a bit of paper and slaps a pen through it. And you're like, oh, well, now I get it.
Yeah. Do you know what's worrying about all of this, though?
Mm.
There are people actively working. Like, there was a thing a while ago that came out and it hit the news. And it was like, the warp drive is being worked on.
Yep.
And how's it going to work? It's going to fold space around it.
Yeah.
It's going to stay stationary and fold space around it. And then that was it. It just disappeared forever. Since then, there's a British startup that are working on nuclear fusion engines that takes Mars travel from 30 days down to like 12 hours.
Ooh.
And it's this little startup that's just getting going now. And it's mad to think that we can watch Event Horizon where it was like the distant future of 2040. And here we are in 2025 and everyone's like, nuclear fusion engines, we're making the warp drive.
Boy.
Engage. Do you know what I mean?
Well, even more worrying is that there are rumors, and I've looked into them and they are bollocks. But for people who are fans of Aliens, yourself, as in the actual thing, there's a disappearing warship called the USS Eldridge.
Okay.
Which is part of a thing called the Philadelphia Experiment.
Oh, wait, hold on. We're getting into some sort of like niche areas right now. So the Philadelphia Experiment
right,
is fucking wild. I went through a phase when I was big in my pot smoking days.
Yeah.
Where I fucking loved this stuff.
Right, okay.
I loved this stuff.
Can you, for the average listener, explain what the Philadelphia Experiment in a sentence is?
It's a naval ship that was experimenting with cloaking technology.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Apparently.
It was.
Okay.
This is 100% a truth fact coming at you right now. It was a naval ship that was experimenting with cloaking technology, and they tested it in top secret with a very small select crew of people.
Allegedly, yes.
They definitely tested it with a very small crew of people in top secret, where it was based on vibration and frequency, and it was designed to make the material of the ship vibrate at such a frequency that light would just pass through. Ooh. It wouldn't do its thing.
That sounds nonsense, but continue.
It's science, buddy.
Okay.
We're talking about Event Horizon right now. We won't get into science.
Okay.
They build a machine. They turn the machine on. The ship disappears, as in is gone.
Right.
Now, there's reports in this one book that I read that I found at the back of a charity shop that was far too cheap for it to be anything but fact. It appeared briefly at a distant port. So it traveled distance.
Yeah.
Not through time, not through whatever. No. It traveled through space.
Yeah. Couple of thousand miles.
Yes. On to like the other side of the United States. Mm-hmm. And then it reappeared however long later, but there were members of the crew missing and no one could figure out why. And as they were inspecting the ship, they were finding that people were fused with the material of the ship. So there was crew members that were like melded into the metal, screaming in pain. Awful stuff.
Apparently so. And do you...
Definitely so.
Right. Well...
Let's not disrespect those fallen.
This is making sense now. Well, because this film was subject to a huge amount of criticism by believers of the Philadelphia Experiment, believing that Event Horizon...
I think you're mispronouncing scientists, but continue.
That Event Horizon, the movie, was a CIA psyop to cover up the actual truth of the Philadelphia Experiment, because the events depicted in the film were relevant enough that they believed that by making this sci-fi horror, they were trying to detract from the validity of the people campaigning for the Philadelphia Experiment's files release. And I'm now beginning to wonder...
Interesting.
If you're in on it, I'm wondering if you're a Philadelphia guy and you've been on the wrong message board and they're like, you know when you eventually cover Event Horizon because Rob loves it, you need to trash it because the truth is out there.
So I'm not going to criticize the film for this.
Right. You're going to retain a little bit of, you know, plausible deniability that you're not on those message boards.
I'm not saying that I am on them. I'm not saying I'm not on them.
Right.
I'm not saying
you anything. Can neither confirm nor deny.
I'm pleading the fifth.
That you are Needle Hunter 58342.
Needle Hunter?
Yeah, I'd panicked. I just had two words.
I need to come up with a quick fucking online name for Ben. What's it going to be? Crackhead 427.
No, yes, needle in a haystack.
Sure.
Conspiracies. You're looking that for makes the more details.
Sense. My mind went straight for like hard drugs.
Right.
So you just sort of like smackhead. He's on a forum for Philadelphia Experiment. Smackhead. No, it's one of these things where there was a group of guys. We used to put on weird electronic music, discuss this shit at length.
Fine.
Like it was an actual thing, but we were so fucking stoned that it felt amazing.
It felt real.
You know what I mean? Right. It felt like it was the thing.
Well, I don't think this is a Philadelphia Experiment psyop. What I will say is that I know I said, you know, if you're a fan of Dead Space, thank this movie.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Doom 3, thank this movie.
Yeah.
I will say, if you're a fan of Warhammer 40K, this film thanks you.
Interesting.
Because in the tabletop miniature battle game Warhammer 40K, which is a bizarre tabletop game that is dog shit to play.
It's mint to play.
Absolutely. It's maths and dice.
Yeah, but it's really exciting. It's gambling.
Okay.
It's math gambling. I've never
done it. I've never wanted to.
It's mint.
But when I can't sleep, in order to sell the game, they've released thousands of books.
Yeah, of course.
Every single like aspect of this world has been built out. The stories written inside the world are dog shit, and the quality of the prose is dog shit. But the world itself that's been built, incredible.
I think you're thinking of the fan fiction. Some of the fan fiction is real tough to get through.
Right, okay. I've, again, not bothered.
It's quite fun with the world
building. When I can't sleep, I'll find a YouTube video explaining some obscure aspect of this invented world.
Yeah.
And that'll kind of be my bedtime story.
Oh, I like this.
And in this world,
right,
for this thing, the default way of getting around is by faster than light travel, by taking a shortcut through hell.
Yeah.
To the point where players of the game
right.
are convinced that this film Event Horizon is a prequel
yeah.
to Warhammer, right?
So the dimension that Event Horizon goes through is the Chaos dimension,
is the warp, right?
Okay, that's, yeah, that's I get you. Yeah.
Now, writer Phil Eisner of the movie was a player in the early 90s.
Of course he was. And watch the fucking film. Right.
But digging through his Twitter, there is this absolute bullshit get out of jail free card from him. And this is why I think he's a dog shit writer, because he can't even write a good excuse. Okay. I played the shit out of 40K, so it was definitely an influence, conscious or otherwise. Oh, yeah, I might have subconsciously lifted a direct right. thing. I've just got a cathedral-shaped ship in the shape of a crucifix, taking a shortcut through a chaotic dimension.
The only thing that this is missing
is
chainsaw guns and mech suits.
Right, exactly.
You chuck that shit in and that's it, it's 40K.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, this is where it gets serious, Ben.
Yeah?
Because you have often said,
mm-hmm.
we have different definitions of what a perfect film is.
Yes.
Mine is, it sets up my expectations.
Yeah.
And it fulfills them.
Yeah.
And that's all it has to do. Has to go, this is the story I'm going to tell, and this is how satisfied you're going to be with it.
Yeah.
And I get to the end and I go, okay, you achieved your goals perfectly.
I was that satisfied with it.
Right. There wasn't a misstep. There wasn't anything that felt like it was causing friction to those goals. Whereas yours is, you like the idea that the people telling the story are the most qualified people on the planet to tell that story, because what they're going through is what the film depicts.
100%.
I'm not going to make the case that this film is fully a perfect film, but it is a film about a vehicle taking a shortcut through hell.
Yes.
And this movie vehicle did in fact take a shortcut through production hell.
Okay.
So Paramount, back in today of 1997.
Yeah.
They had this big old movie called Titanic.
They did.
And Titanic, famously, and listeners to our Dark City episode will know, was delayed.
It was, yeah.
And every other film that was supposed to be coming out when Titanic wasn't coming out has now got to wait for Titanic to die down.
Of course.
Except for Event Horizon, which only got greenlit because Paramount had a gap in their summer production schedule that needed to be filled. So they were like, we've got to push everything that was coming out in the autumn and winter. That's going back.
And now we have a little gap.
Now we've got a short gap of a few weeks.
Right.
So they brought production way forward. Shoot schedules got cut right in half. They offered Anderson, the director, a budget of $60 million to direct.
Right.
But it came with a catch. He had to agree to the rushed production schedule.
Okay.
So he only had 4 weeks to film the movie.
Okay.
And it forced him to work 7 days a week. He had 4 weeks to film and 6 weeks to edit.
Fucking hell. Right? Yeah, okay.
But at the start of editing, he still had 2 weeks of filming with the second unit.
Right.
To get all the pickups and all the other bits. Which basically reduces editing time to just 4 weeks. So this is an 8 week film. Regular listeners of the podcast, if you remember the episode coming out about Raw, that's when we would have started filming, and the film would be done as you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
For a whole $60 million film.
Yeah.
Not great.
That's not great, but I feel like if we had $60 million and 8 weeks of free time.
I think the thing is $60 million, you need to spend that as best as you can.
100%.
That takes a week to figure out, right?
Yeah.
If I've got a $60 million budget, that's going to take longer. I can spend a £5 budget in about a minute.
Quite long.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I feel like you're overthinking it, man.
He had to work 7 days a week, 18-hour days. He would have to film, then go back, start editing, get the minimum amount of sleep, then turn up to set the next day. Did that for 8 weeks in a row.
Yeah, fucking.
Which is why...
That's Herculean.
Right. That's why the accidents started piling up. Jolie Richardson, who plays Lieutenant Stark.
Yep.
Blonde actress.
Yeah.
She says, there was one scene with Sam Neill and I at the console. We're meant to be typing away, and on a count of three, there'd be a fake explosion and we'd throw ourselves back off our chairs.
Yeah.
When Sam and I did this scene for real, there was the count of three, and neither of us to this day can remember what happened next. The explosion went off and we woke up a few moments later on the floor.
Wow.
Just goes on to say, there was a scene where Lawrence Fishburne and I were crawling down a tunnel to try and make it through a heavy door just before it slammed shut.
Yes,
this when
the glass is broken, she's being like...
Decompression, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The stuntman was up on the ceiling queuing the door to slam the moment I got through.
Right.
But when we finally got to the stunt, there was so much... there was so much smoke he couldn't see me. He pulled the lever and my foot got jammed in the door.
Fucking incredible.
The filming of the fireball inside the gravity drive tunnel, right at the early bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Caused a real fire that destroyed the set.
Fuck's sake.
They had a military flamethrower mounted to produce a huge fireball.
Yeah.
But due to the force of the jet, it toppled backwards, started to incinerate the wooden ceiling.
Right.
The controls to turn it off were on it, so no one could get close to it.
Fucking incredible.
And it burned the entire set down.
Incredible. This is what you want in a film.
Right.
We've got, eight weeks. What do we do? Should we just fucking trash everything?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. So there were reasons for there being issues with this film, but
yeah,
none of them are as big as this.
Okay.
The film they were making is not the film we will ever be able to see.
How come?
There was a much more violent, much darker film that they were forced to completely remove.
Interesting.
It was shown to test audiences.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Right.
Yeah.
Massive walkouts.
Yeah.
The film was too long.
Right.
But hear me out.
Got you.
And this is why earlier I made you say this was a headphones episode.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about what they cut from the film.
Okay.
Because
yeah, yeah,
there are flashbacks that are you see various frames.
Yes. Yeah.
All of that.
Right.
They got adult film actors
and
amputees.
Okay.
To do...
Oh, I know which bit you're on about now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So this is what got cut from the film.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a lot of plot and storyline from the first half.
Interesting.
The Jason Isaacs character,
yeah,
who gets his back opened and butterflied,
yeah, yeah,
and then that's hung from wires.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be found still alive, and Lawrence Fishburne was going to have to kill him. There's a whole scene he did where he was hung up.
No way.
Crew members sticking fingers into one another's eyes.
Interesting.
A female crew member sodomizing a male crew member with an iron pipe.
Ooh.
Raping and eating one another.
Interesting.
Crewman pulls his own intestines out of his mouth. One crew member is held and stabbed in the back of the head with a spike, and parts of his mouth and teeth pop out. They used a man who had no teeth.
Right.
And got a thing inside his mouth to pop out through fake teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
That they had installed.
Incredible.
Another crew member is crawling on the floor while others are hitting his legs with steel bars and smashing them into pieces.
Right.
One woman has screws drilled into her teeth.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. Another woman has her breast mauled and ripped off and eaten by another crewman who was raping her.
What the fuck?
Biting into the shoulder of a man she's having sex with and eating his flesh. Plus some other parts were cut. For realism, real-life amputees and practical special effects were used in shots where body parts get mangled, and porn actors were hired to depict the nudity and sexual depravity. So what this film was supposed to be,
right,
was the first half.
Okay.
Was supposed to be 15 minutes longer.
Yeah, yeah.
With backstory for each of the crew,
which would have made it a thousand
which
times.
Is why
that would make the second half of the film much more palatable.
You would know why the medic is the way he is.
Yeah, yeah.
Why Sean Pertwee is the way he is.
I would love this because that would, if this was in there, that would sell the film for me so much more. It would be unreal. Like it'd knock it up.
Yeah.
In my rating.
And it was then at the midway point.
Right.
Supposed to be one of the most sexually violent films ever released in the UK.
Right. I understand the issues.
Right.
Yeah, I can see why after hearing
and
this.
And then from depicting that, everything that followed would have been people in shock, knowing that that was going to be their fate. Genuinely terrified that they were going to rape and eat one another to death.
But they all would have been aware of their fate, which would make the second half and the
make
panic.
Sense.
All of that would make sense. I mean, admittedly, that the chunk that was taken out is very mean-spirited and very sort of like to the point of beyond fucked up.
Yeah. So this was supposed to be a proper big budget, video nasty.
Yeah.
Pushing the envelope of what hell and its depiction on screen would have been up to that point and to this day.
Yeah, that would have been fucked up even now.
Right.
I don't know if I could have handled all of it in one go. That might have been a sort of
the
like
problem
a, bit
is,
of a bit of a pacer.
The problem is no one could, I think.
Interesting.
And I think, interestingly, it's a film sort of based around a fallacy of if we take this big budget, put this absolute horror in it.
Right.
It would be a fantastic film.
It would be incredible, yeah.
But it would also not sell. And it would be a very difficult watch.
It'd be one of those films. You know, like Requiem for a Dream or Irreversible or Baisemoir or stuff like this.
That's what it was going to be.
That like the truly yeah. upsetting films that mm-hmm. you watch once yes. and then really struggle to go back yes. to.
Which is why you then have characters who are a bit lighter, like yeah. The black mechanic who gets booted off the ship and is floating off into...
Here I come, motherfucker!
Would have been a necessary and very needed yeah. moment of levity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you'd have been like, I don't know if I can deal with this. And then that would have happened and you'd have been like, okay, I'm all right. I'm okay. all right.
He's, that's he's super fine, silly. So I'm fine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay.
Those little moments of silly fun suddenly, rather than cheapening the movie, become necessary lifelines.
That makes it a lot of it makes sense
the stress,
now. Yeah.
Right?
This is all making a lot more sense. I yeah. feel like the original movie, everything that you've just told me
mm-hmm.
justifies every issue that I ever have with this film.
Right.
So when I watch this film now, and I know what's coming, I know what it is, I tend to sort of, I check out of some of the high tense scenes because yeah. it struggles to build the tension because I don't know why they're panicking. Like the countdown bit very early on when they don't know where the Event Horizon in the mist. Yeah. If they were cool and calm and collected about it, we could have had a really, really nice world-building shot. Look at the Event Horizon. Look yeah. at the ship. Look at what it is.
See, I think I get that.
Really?
Yeah. And but this is where I'm stuck in a bit of a catch-22 with this film.
Okay.
Because I watched it when I was whatever age I was.
Yeah, yeah.
I found it genuinely terrifying.
Incredible.
And so it earned legitimacy for me
yeah, yeah.
as a film through the way it made me feel.
Right.
Now when I rewatch it, I don't find it scary.
Okay.
And I can't tell if that's because the film has aged poorly, I have grown up,
mm-hmm.
or it was never good. And I think it's a little bit of all three.
I feel like your nostalgia will play a part in the 100%. Love for this film.
1,000%. Yeah. I cannot separate myself from how this film made me feel when I was young.
Definitely.
So I will be forgiving so much that a new watcher who yeah. might listen to this show mm-hmm. and then go, do you know what, I'll check it out, is just not going to get.
Not necessarily get. I think there's a chance for that to get there because this film is obviously made with a lot of love.
Yes.
It's obviously very rushed, but there is a lot of love in mm-hmm. it. And you can tell that every single person has given it their all.
Yeah.
And I don't think after what you've just told me, now I know it's not. Paul's fault
yep.
or Phil's fault because everything was there.
Yep.
They squeezed everything in. They had to cut big chunks of it and they kept stuff that would just move the story along.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think it suffers from that aspect.
It does.
But again, I'm spoiled because I watch a movie a day
yeah,
minimum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whether it's like I'm on a, like a weird 1930s kick at the minute.
Nice.
I've just bought like Tarzan and some of the old Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Hitchcock's the one.
Fucking obsessed with them, man.
Yeah, perfect.
But even back then,
mm-hmm.
the love and the compassion for each frame is like
shining,
it's just
through.
Dripping in sauce.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like if Event Horizon, the thing that fucks me off the most,
right?
Test audiences.
Right?
Why the fuck are we just getting the general public in? Like, if you're making a hyper-violent
yeah.
horror space sci-fi
movie. Get fans of that.
Get a fucking horror fan in the room.
Yeah.
Mate, you like Hellraiser? Yeah, sick. Yeah. Watch this. What do you think? You love it.
Right.
Sick. Let's run with this.
I think what Paul Anderson was doing, and it comes back to my Cronut thing, of get the alien populism,
sure.
ship design, this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Take the emotional arc of a Solaris.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that Cenobite cinnamon sugar.
Sure.
But do what Hellraiser never did.
Yeah.
Hellraiser hints and it goes, oh, look. I mean, I've always loved the Cenobites as an idea.
I love the Cenobites.
As a concept, as a creature design.
Yeah.
But I've seen a few Hellraiser films.
Mm-hmm.
Long enough ago that I can't really remember them.
Okay.
And you never see, they never live up to the threat.
No, they just...
They never deliver on the promise.
No, they get their nips out and right, they're sort of like, right. I've got something to show you.
Right,
and it's like,
exactly,
what are
right.
we doing? What are you talking about?
And to be fair, like, I'd love to be a Cenobite.
I know you would.
I'm just, that every bit of me, I'm just yeah. like, that's what I'm designed to be. And I hate the fact that yeah. I live in a world that is just never going to make me one.
It's, do you know, it's worrying to hear you say this, to be honest, mate, because I feel like people that are desperate to be Cenobites are one Discord conversation away from a fedora.
I am, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Been.
This is
it's,
what's
I've
worrying
always
me.
Said, it's only the fact that I met you that I am not a street magician.
Yeah.
But the whole setup, like the Cenobites are having a great fucking time. They're doing what they love.
Sure.
They love that shit.
They do.
They are at the best kink party.
Yeah.
I've never even been to a good kink party. They're at the best one.
Yeah, for them.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd be one of them. That's a little bit like saying, oh, if you were gay, would you have sex with a man? I'm like, yes, because I'd be gay and I'd fucking love it.
But that
the answer's in the question.
Would hopefully be given consent because the Cenobites, shockingly, aren't too big on this.
Oh, are they not?
What do you mean?
I thought
whoever
the whole
fucks around with the cube, they're just sort of like, I'm going to skin you. Yeah. Like that's, it's not sort of like a, hey babe, how are you?
Because I admittedly, it's kind of where I got the whole vibe of Cenobites from is you play with the Lament Cube, which is an ancient cube designed for proper sex pests.
Right.
And you're like, I'm a proper sex pest. And they're like, yeah, but are you sure you want this? Tell you what, we'll make it mad difficult.
Right.
It's like the dark web. It's like you don't get on there accidentally. So in order to solve the Lament Cube, you need to put a lot of effort in. There's a lot of checks where they're going, are you sure? Are you sure you want a skin? And we've made this mad difficult. So by the time the cube's open, I feel like Event Horizon misses a trick where Event Horizon, there's no consent. The Cenobites are like, dude, you put 40 minutes into getting here.
Yeah, hold on a sec. You put 40 minutes into solving a puzzle, something humans are famously like drawn to since the beginning of time.
Right. I feel like there is on the Lament Cube, there should be a tag that explains what solving the puzzle
100%,
means that's been lost. But that's not on the Cenobites. They're on the other side. They're in the cube. They can't help if you've lost the manual.
That's not... I feel like you're giving them too much here. You're giving them a bit too much.
I'm giving them more than I give the Event Horizon, which is mad rapey.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, oh, you're on the ship, so fuck you, or you're up for a skinning.
Oh, man. Now I'm... thinking back to Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Frank is... You're Frank.
Okay.
Just trying to get the next kick.
Yeah,
next sort of like, this isn't enough.
Yeah.
Ends up skinning himself and going to a different dimension to try and get fucked into like whatever, a soup, whatever
perfect.
He is. But also...
I'd love to be fucked into a soup.
His sister-in-law is like, oh my God, you're so mysterious. I must have you. And it's like, get a better boyfriend. Have a standard. Have one standard. Get a better boyfriend. That's the whole thing I get from that film. And I'm just sort of like, you're gonna watch your fucking ideal man get fucked by monsters because he can't get anything from you. And you're going to feed him so that he can come back to a human realm. What the fuck? Tell me you married for the money without telling me you married for the money. Fucking just awful people being awful people.
Yeah.
And then a Cenobite is trying to finger you with a fucking drill. Sorry, I'm off on one now. I need to rein it back in. I'm 36. I shouldn't be getting this upset over Hellraiser.
Fictional monsters.
Yeah, this is literally it. You brought up Cenobites and I'm literally like, but let's get into the library. Where's the conviction?
Would it help if I told you what Event Horizon really means?
Hit me with it, man, because I've got no fucking clue. Right. I've watched this like 3 times this week and I swear to God, every time I watch it, it makes less and less sense to me.
Well, there's a couple threads.
Okay.
So you got the sort of old, tired man tampering with powers beyond his control will only ever lead to ruin.
Right? Sure. Yeah.
We've seen it 1,000 times.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a more wholesome and I think slightly cut from the movie, which we will never get, by the way, because they stored the raw negatives.
Mm-hmm.
In a Himalayan salt cave, where
as you would,
because it's paramount.
Sure.
So they are degraded beyond use.
Shocking. Who'd have thought?
There is one producer who claims he has a VHS copy.
Bullshit.
Of an early rush, which has never materialized.
This is again, all I'm getting is Fedora vibes.
Right.
I actually have it on VHS. Shut the fuck up, Derek.
Right.
All right. You didn't finger that girl. I'm still stuck on the Cenobites, so I'm really sorry.
But I feel like there is hidden in there
the
fragments of the, you've got to get over your regrets before they become your undoing. You've got to forgive yourself because others have.
I like
have.
This, yeah.
And you've, now that you've learned what the right thing to do is, you've got to learn from those things. That's what makes it okay. So the captain closes the door on a crewmate in a previous space adventure that we don't see, and he's riddled with regret that he didn't try and save that one guy.
Yeah.
But he learns from that and says, I'm never doing that again.
Right.
And then that's his lesson, that's his arc, which Sam Neill doesn't learn.
No.
You've got to let the past go, otherwise the past will be your undoing, kind of being the subtext.
You're Sam Neill. You're the one that wants to be the Cenobite.
Thing is, I'd have different motivations. I'd just get there and be like, is there any sex happening here? And then the ship would be like, yeah, if you want. And I'd be like, yeah, mint. Set me up.
Yeah. Is the ship sentient? Is the ship the one influencing them? Is it the ship
it's
that's influencing their minds?
It's deliberately fuzzy. I think the implication is that on the way through hell,
right,
it was given some form of sentience, some form of intent.
Because in my mind, it's the crew that are fused, because there's bits of flesh on the wall every now and then that no one ever questions. And I'm like, that isn't a normal part of the ship. Should someone mention the shoulder blade on the fucking ceiling?
That
fan?
Is mentioned, because that's all on the bridge. And that's where they find the footage of the rape death orgy.
Yeah.
And that's the bits that have been flicked up onto the wall.
See, I thought that they were fused into the ship, and then the ship was the one that was sort of like doing this thing.
It's left deliberately fuzzy so that your brain can, you know.
My brain's going to go into weird places. I don't want to be, but in that world, I don't want that to happen.
I think there's a different lesson here, though. I think the film, as we said, cost $60 million, only made 42.
Right.
And that's before you even get into marketing costs.
Yeah.
But of all of Paul W.S. Anderson's films, this is the one I enjoy the most. And it's funny.
Same.
It's right. And I think he says, Paul W.S. Anderson says about this movie, I was going on to make a movie with Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And I screened the movie for Kurt. Afterward, he said, Paul, I'm telling you now, in 20 years, that's going to be the movie you're really glad you made.
Yeah.
And he was right. It's finally getting the reaction now that I was hoping it would get 25 years ago. Even if it doesn't get the reception you initially want, it'll find its audience and it'll find its place and it'll be appreciated. It might just take a little time.
Okay.
And the reason I like that is because Paul W.S. Anderson is not a good filmmaker.
No.
He's
not a good writer.
He's a passable director. I don't think of Event Horizon and go, wow, what a fucking masterpiece of direction.
No, same.
Fun script, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
But with Event Horizon, he did try and do something.
100%.
And for me, it has found its place, and I do appreciate it, because for all of its many flaws, I'm going to bring up something you said earlier. This scratches an itch that I can reach with no other film.
I can see that.
Alien is close.
Yeah.
And Alien has the benefit of being a far better film.
Mm-hmm.
But Ghost House in Space That You Can't Escape has very few entries in its library.
100%.
And of those entries that are good and enjoyable,
yeah,
this has got so much custom written for me.
Yeah.
Just my favorite. It's my favorite and my best.
That's good.
And I feel like just try a thing. Try a thing.
Good.
And if it fucking fails,
yeah,
at least you like it.
This is the whole thing that I get from this film.
Yeah.
Just do the thing. It doesn't matter. It literally does not matter, because whatever the thing is that you're doing and you're worrying, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? Will it? Won't it? Chances are the answer is yes to all of that shit. All of it. Because you're never going to fucking please everyone.
No.
Look at us, right? We've known each other for nearly 2 decades. You're an old man now.
I am.
You're far older than me.
Yeah.
Far, far older than me.
I am.
And my youth is still very much intact.
It is.
Yours is rapidly degrading. Yours is in a Himalayan mountain, in a salt mine in the Himalayan
just
mountains.
Just getting moldy.
Owned by Paramount. trying to bribe the administration. And you love this for what it is.
I do.
I'm not the biggest fan of it,
no,
but that's fine. But the reason that I do love this is because you love it.
Yeah.
We cover, I feel like if we were the test audience on this, I would have all of the negatives to say.
Yeah.
You would be having the fucking best time of your life, and it would balance out in a perfect fucking thing.
I feel like if I watched this for the first time now, all I'd be doing is picking holes.
100%.
And I'd be going, oh, that doesn't make sense.
You watched this at 11, though.
Right.
We were watching this at the times that we watched it for the first time.
This in 1997 was transgressive and cool as fuck.
Yeah, of course. It's edgy as shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's edgy to the point of being considered edgelord now.
I think now it is.
Yeah,
100%. I think at the time it was just doing
at the
a
time it's
thing.
Like under it's a fucking it's a duster. It's a full length duster and New Rock boots. That's what it was.
That was so
and
good.
Back in like the early 2000s, late 90s, that shit was the coolest fucking thing I'd ever seen in my
happy
life.
Happy days.
You know what I mean?
Right. I think we're nearly out of time.
Yeah, but just before we give you our final, definitive, controversial all time rating, let's see what all you lovely people on the World Wide Web have been saying about us, eh?
Yeah.
Get some comment corner on the go, shall we?
Well, R. Drippin got in touch.
Yeah.
With a direct message.
Okay.
And these always cut straight to the bone, because that literally does vibrate our pockets. We share the Instagram account.
Yeah.
And they just got in touch and they said, you're going to do weapons, right?
Interesting.
Are we going to do weapons? Because we were going to do weapons, but then we saw Together and we had a late change of plan. But it feels like we kind of want to do Barbarian first.
Do you know what I want to do with weapons? And the only reason that I hesitated on it, I was going to bring weapons instead of Together, but doing Barbarian first would make sense. But his next film is what interests me. He's going on to do a Resident Evil reboot.
He is, yeah.
And it's, he says it's like nothing that's ever been done in cinema before. Well, which is a bold statement to make.
It's a bold statement. And that's a bold statement.
I would like to do a series where we cover like his movies, yeah, including Barbarian, including Weapons, and then leading into like maybe release an episode the same weekend that his Resident Evil
3
movie.
Is a good one. 3 is a good one to do because we, yeah, can do Barbarian, which is the sort of underappreciated cult classic with Justin Long getting fucking violated, which, yeah, as mint. He should in every movie.
It is mint.
Then Weapons, which is a kind of populist breakout. And then we can time that with, yeah, the new release. So it's not on us. It's on him.
It is.
Getting his arse in gear.
Chop, chop.
Paul W.S. Anderson fucking made Event Horizon in 8 weeks with a box of scraps. So
yeah,
I think you can beat his Resident Evil film by literally just making an film.
You'll be quick, though, because in the time that it'll take to make a good Resident Evil movie, Paul W.S. Anderson will probably knock out another three.
Another three shit
Another
ones.
Three. He'll write them up in a night, chuck, yeah, them out in the next couple of weeks. It's one of them.
And then this is a little older comment, but it still checks out. Okay. Keith Povey, 82, commenting on one of our reels about the classic Ice Cube starring War of the Worlds.
Sure.
Said, I fucking love this about the reel.
Yeah.
And even better, I don't feel any need to watch the car crash of a film it refers to either.
Bud, you're welcome. But one thing that I will say is if you and a buddy get together to watch this, to watch The War of the Worlds 2025, you should. It's a fucking rip.
It's a hoot.
It's a ride, buddy.
I will also say it is infuriating that I don't think we have had as many people get in touch and say that they legitimately laughed out loud at something that we had posted on social media.
Okay.
As we have from people referring to us trying to cover War of the Worlds.
Yeah, it was a difficult one to cover.
It was a difficult one to cover, but that reel we did with you showing me things on your phone...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Has had a genuine people coming up to me or messaging me or texting me going, that was the funniest thing you've ever put on social media. And that's infuriating because it did fuck all numbers wise. And it really highlighted for me, yeah, what we like is not what the algorithm likes.
It also took us the shortest amount of time, yeah, to record and edit that, yeah, one. That was like a...
That was rapid. That's a single camera.
It's like a 2-hour turnaround, yeah, for the whole thing. Normally... So, it's a lot longer.
It's normally about 3 hours per clip. So all I'm saying is it's a really really evident highlight of what we like is not what social media platforms like, which is why it's never been more important to tell a friend.
Go fucking tell you, mate.
Because if you like this,
yeah,
Instagram doesn't, and it's the only way at the moment that we've got of reaching new listeners.
Yeah. Plus, word of mouth is way stronger than social media. I see tons of shit on social media where I'm like, oh, I'll check that out. And, yeah, then forget it exists the second I put the next reel on.
On Spotify, find the share button and just send it to a mate you think would like it, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be lovely. We'd love
that.
That'd
be great.
What are you rating Event Horizon, Ben?
I'm going to give it a saucy 7.
A saucy 7?
A sassy 7. That's what I'm giving it.
Someone got in touch with good ways of referring to...
Oh, I saw this the other day.
Yeah, and yeah, I've forgotten them, but a saucy 7.
There was a big boned 9 or...
Big bone 9's pretty good. Yeah. I like big bone 9.
A well-rounded 5. There was something else in there. I can't remember.
Saucy 7, though. I like that. Yeah. I'm, you know me. I'm a big fan of alliteration.
How about you?
Fat 10.
Love that.
Love this film.
Okay.
Always love this film. I'll be buried with a fucking DVD copy of this movie. Not because it's good, but because it's fun and it just it scratches itches that only this film can scratch. I would love there to be another genuinely supernatural film set in space that's halfway decent, because Alien is by far and away a far better film than this.
Yeah.
It's not supernatural. And I love that idea of you are not in control. This is a power that transcends space and time. This isn't a reality based thing that you're locked in with.
Yeah, yeah.
This has you by the three dimensions.
Yeah.
Where are you going, air breather?
Yeah. 100%.
There's just a doom in that I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I'm a rat in a cage.
Yes.
Despite all my rage.
That Pumpkins reference.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Despite all my rage, I'm still making minimum wage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I think that's what Billy Corgan was trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Robert, yeah. That's it. That's the end of the show.
That's it. That is everything. Guys, thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
We love you all dearly.
We really do.
Genuinely do. And to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know.
Yeah.
We see the numbers. You all listen on the Monday. Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, feelings, and subtext of Event Horizon into a little motivational pep talk for you to get you through your week, a little Monday motivation. Well, I just tell you to do what society tells everyone to do and just consume. Nearly drowned in my own saliva.
That was outrageous.
That would be my Cenobite power. Just a wet mouth.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Consume.
Do the thing. Just go do the weird thing. Whatever weird thing it is that you're thinking is like, should I, shouldn't I? Some people won't like it. Some people will. Just fucking do it. Don't Louis CK the thing. Don't do it at someone. Make sure that they're okay with the thing.
Right.
Before, you know what
Maybe
I mean?
Maybe set up a puzzle box.